Hi, today's August 18th, 2017. This is Todd Agosor, Mobius Podcast number 218. And today we are back with John Westfall.
My intrepid explorations are done.
Yep.
And I can tell stories of the crazy things I've seen, and, you know, it's been busy.
Yep, super secret mission, I'm sure. The reason I'm pausing, folks, is I'm having some audio difficulties, but we'll figure this out. Any rate, so John is back. I want to thank my my good Hawaii-based friends. Let's see, in more or less alphabetical order, Paul Lawler, Ricky Lee, Ryan Ozawa for filling in for John while he was gone for the last two weekends.
Yep, I noticed that you have the All Hawaii podcasts.
And yep.
I feel very honored to bust up the Hawaii group with some Mississippi.
Any rate, we'll get some of John's travel stories at the end, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But for a couple of small items that I noticed before we get started with some of our more major topics. First, I noticed that Facebook has a free web-based diagramming tool that is called draw.io. So just go to draw, draw.io. And it can save its diagrams to a number of cloud services as well as your local device. I played with it a little. It won't replace Visio, but it's kind of interesting and, you know, nice to have in a pinch if you don't have Visio, which most people don't. No app, as far as I know. It's just web-based. I haven't tried it on a mobile device. I just tried it in desktop and worked fine there. The other thing that I wanted to bring up and talk to John about, since John is the one who suggested the private internet access VPN service, which I am a subscriber of, and that is one of their competitors that's pretty highly regarded, Tunnel Bear, just completed a public security audit, which I thought was interesting. But, you know, just because it's good to have security audits and VPNs and things to, you know, for these services that claim to provide privacy and secure connectivity and that sort of thing. And my question to John is, you know, I don't know if it's because so many people are now interested in VPNs, but I've noticed that, and I don't know if it's an app problem or something else, but I've noticed that on my iPhone and iPad, every now and then, private internet access is VPN, PIA's VPN, just sort of stops working after a while. You know, like you're browsing the web and, you know, blah, 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 you're reading various sites, and all of a sudden you refresh something or you click on a link and nothing happens. And I found the fix, if you will, a workaround more likely, is to simply go to PIA, turn the service on and back off and back on, or just tap automatic to try to have it hit another server. Mm-hmm. But have you experienced this at all?
I've experienced it actually not with private internet access, but I've experienced it with a few corporate VPNs that I've used over the years. And so it makes me think that this could be a VPN issue that most people haven't really noticed, because VPNs are now becoming mainstream. So if you didn't know about them, if you never used a VPN, you didn't know this, but I've noticed VPN systems in the past. In fact, the one at my current employer, where I have to occasionally disconnect and reconnect, almost as if the connection just dies and nothing can resurrect it except disconnect, reconnect.
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing is, and I'm beginning to wonder if it's an app problem, because I sometimes use it in a Chrome browser. You know, there's PIA has a Chrome browser plugin, so you can just have the browser itself, not have your whole computer on a VPN, which is kind of nice. And that doesn't seem to be an issue there, so not sure. And I should note that PIA has a lot of VPN servers around the world, and by a lot, I mean at least several dozen.
Mm-hmm.
Like three or four dozen? I mean, it seems like a lot. I didn't count them. But,
I mean, to put in perspective, I'm using a 27-inch cinema display right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if I tap on PIA's icon in the upper, you know, the toolbar on a Mac, it goes down at least about 60 to 70% of the screen is the menu.
Right, on a small typeface, right?
Yeah, and this is a 27-inch display, so...
All right. Anyway, I just thought I'd mention it because, you know, I've got a one-year subscription, so I'm not looking to change anytime soon. But just wondering. Next item is another kind of, not so much security, maybe privacy more than security. And Mozilla has a new browser for iOS and Android. They're calling Firefox Focus. And it's they claim it's an ultra-simplified browser with no bells and whistles, minimum buttons, no stored password, and it doesn't remember any history. It also blocks third-party trackers automatically to presumably give you a more private browsing experience. Haven't tried it. Not sure I will. But, you know, there you are if you're on a really lightweight browser.
We used to care so much about that kind of thing, and now we don't seem to care as much. It's kind of nice to see Mozilla come up with this because back in, you know, about 10, 15 years ago, before the iPhone came out with unlimited data, people actually cared about how much data you were transferring. This will get into something I'll talk about later in this podcast. But, you know, you could get devices that would, you know, talk about, well, you know, this is lean, it doesn't download everything, et cetera.
Right.
It doesn't have all the bandwidth hogging, et cetera.
Yeah, so if anybody tries it, let us know, especially our friends. Tell us what you think. I guess I could install it just to see what it does. Maybe I'd like it. Now, this one
we're going to take this podcast to a level of investigative journalism that it has not gone on before.
The Mobile Views post. Now, the next one I really want your opinion on, John, because I know you used to be a Google Voice user. I think you stopped using it a while back.
I still have it.
Not as important.
I just don't use it as much.
Yeah. Now, the reason I say that is because, you know, Google Home, which is the Echo-like device that Google sells, just got a new feature, at least for folks in the U.S. and Canada, and that is it can make free telephone calls. And by telephone calls, I mean, you know, like to POTS lines, plain old telephone systems. And apparently, if you have either Google Fi or you have Google Voice account, and I have one of each. I have two different accounts. One with, because you can't have Google Fi and Google Voice in the same account. Any rate, apparently, it will provide caller ID and other features if you have one of those services on Google Home. And the other interesting thing, I don't think you bought one. I didn't buy one yet. Is that the price dropped? It was $129, and it's now $109. So, not exactly cheap, but that's kind of an interesting feature to have, I think.
It's still though a hard sell for me. Both Google Home and Apple's forthcoming HomePod over the $50, you know,
Amazon Echo
dot. Yep.
Yeah, that's a thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm kind of tempted, since I have both Google Voice on one account and Google Fi on another account, I'm kind of tempted just to have that feature. Not that I make a lot of voice calls, but it'd be kind of interesting, I think. To, you know, especially when you've got, you know, you've got like you need to call in for warranty or something, and you know how you're always put on hold, and it'd be kind of nice to just have it on, you know, just have the Google Home make the phone call and the speaker's active and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, wondered about that. And the next one you probably don't care too much about since you're not an Android user anymore. But Android O is apparently, not apparently, Google has a page for it, android.com/eclipse. There's a countdown timer for what looks like the announcement, official announcement of Android O, which is in beta, so it's not like it's anything secret. And apparently it's going to be another commercial code name like, I can't remember what it was now. KitKat. Android K, KitKat, was the first commercially named dessert. And Android O is going to be Oreo, which is, you know, no surprise to anybody. But that's apparently going to happen on Eclipse Day, August 24th, which is this coming Monday.
I would like to point out two things about this that are, one is wholly related to Android, one is completely not. Android, when I see Android Eclipse, all I think about is Android development. Because for many years, all the Android development you did was in the Eclipse IDE before the Android Dev Studio. Right. So When I see Android Eclipse, that kind of cracks me up. That's what I think about. And the second thing is, okay, let's get real about this Eclipse thing.
Okay.
Everyone's been talking about how this is the first time since 1918 that the entire contiguous United States will get to see this eclipse. The last time one of these things happened in 91 or 92, do you know what states were left out in the continuous 48?
Hawaii and Alaska, because we're not contiguous?
No.
I mean, in the contiguous, I don't know.
Yes. Who didn't get to see it?
Let's see. You were in Ohio then, probably. So yeah. I'd say Ohio is one.
Nope. Ohio saw it.
Oh, Ohio saw it. It's too early for you to be in Columbia, so you weren't in New York.
Nope, but it saw it too.
Florida and Maine.
Parts of New Hampshire and Maine.
Oh, okay. I was close.
Everyone else saw it in 91. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just a eclipse curmudgeon, but all the people talking about, well, this is the first time, it's such a big deal. Only if you lived in New Hampshire or Maine. Everyone else, you saw one like 20 years ago.
Now, how close to the path are you to the, you know, the total eclipse?
I'm actually very close. I actually have a friend who is driving up. Nashville is about 5 hours away from me, and that's supposed to be one of the best places to see it, so I have a friend who's driving up there. And I do plan on Monday I will be out of the classes that I teach will be over by that time, so I may wander over to our planetarium. They're doing an event outside where they'll have glasses and all those things where you can look at the eclipse. So I may wander over and do that.
Yeah, I think my daughter's university is actually closing offices and classes during the eclipse portion of the day so people can get out and take a look at it. And they're also handing out free glasses. And they brought in an astrophysicist from NYU or someplace to give a talk, and so it's you know, a big event over there, and they are smack dab in the middle of the total eclipse path, so they're going to have quite a show there on campus.
I'll just be the eclipse curmudgeon.
But, and I'm kind of curmudgeonly too because I have an aged device. I have a Nexus 6, not a 6P. I cannot upgrade to Android O. In fact, I couldn't upgrade to Nougat. Nougat, whatever.
Nougat.
Well, I guess I have Nougat. I just have a new one. So, sorry, John, you were going to say?
I was just going to say it's very depressing.
Yeah.
That you couldn't upgrade. It's really kind of bizarre that iOS, with being the walled garden that people complain it is, gets longer-term updates than Android.
When
Android should be, in theory, easier to update.
But. Yeah, I think the iPad 2, for example, which was released in 2011, could be updated all the way till last year. So it had 4 years of updates, something like that. By design, by definition, Android devices do not get upgrades after 24 months.
Yeah, sometimes that's very strange. Especially now that we don't have the subsidies in the U.S. anymore.
Yeah.
So there's no easy way to believe that people are incentivized to upgrade. People, if anything, are incentivized to not ditch their old devices the way they used to. Same way that, you know, yeah, you could buy a new car and lease every, you know, 24 months or something like that. But most people would rather, you know, pay off a car, keep it for a little bit, and then get something new later.
Right. And of course, you know, this is one of the reasons, I believe, that Android has such a huge fragmentation problem, even though Google refuses to admit it.
Yes.
So I didn't look it up prior to our podcast, but I'm looking it up now and trying to cover my tracks by talking nonsense while my browser loads. But I'm trying to look at the Android dashboard to see what percentage of active Android users, and active user is defined as a phone or a smart backup. An Android device that has talked to the Android App Store, you know, within the last 30 days. That's Google's definition. But anyway, well, that loads. Apparently that's not coming up for whatever reason.
Well, that's telling me that on Nougat, we have about 14% of the Android space.
Marshmallow, that's not bad.
Marshmallow has 32%.
Yeah.
Lollipop has around 28%. KitKat has 16%. But, I mean, we've still got a good chunk of devices, about 7 or 8% that are still on Jelly Bean. Just 4.0 and above. I mean, that's a little crazy.
Yeah, so, you know, and by comparison, right? So, again, I finally got the dashboard up. 13.5% are running some version of NuGet, 7.0 or 7.1. And I'm not even going to look, but I would guess that the percentage of iOS users running some version of 9.x, or I'm sorry, 10 point, what are we running now, 10? 10.x. It's probably 80%, probably more.
Yeah, that's a good question. I will talk randomly and see if I can find out what that is, but... You know, these. Unfortunately, there is no good dashboard for Apple devices to tell you what the level of adoption is. Right. But
and while you do that, you know, I'll mention that my Nexus 6, which is so I bought. Unfortunately, you know, I switched to Google Find. I got my Nexus 6 kind of in the middle of its life cycle. So I bought it in August 2015, or I received it August 2015. As part of my Google Fi subscription service and phone service. So while the phone itself is 2 years old, for me, it's been out for 3 years, which is why I haven't had an upgrade after its first year, essentially. And you know, I would consider replacing it now that it's 2 years old for me as of this month. But Google hasn't announced any new phones. Presumably, they will on Monday. But unless they're really good, you know, I'm hesitant to pay $600-$800 to replace a phone that works perfectly fine for me right now. And you know, unlike the iPhones, which tend to have whiz-bang features every time they have a new release, Android devices tend not to have, at least the ones I use. Maybe because I use the Nexus and, you know, I don't have a Pixel, but probably get a Pixel, whatever. They're not really whiz-bang phones. They're high-end phones. They're expensive phones, but they don't really generally have features that are wow, really like that.
So the proportion of iOS devices running 10.0 or above?
Yeah.
Want to take a guess?
84%.
92%.
Wow.
This is from AppTelligence data tracker for iOS distribution and market share. iOS 9, according to AppTelligence, is at 5.8%, and that's 9.3, the most recent version of 9. But if you go just to 8.2 and older, you're in less than 0.0% market share.
Wow. And, you know, that's part of the other story, the difference, I should say, between iOS and Android. iOS apps tend to work on the device you have because the device you have, 90-something percent at a time, has the same OS that's the current release. With Android, it's a crapshoot. And so if you're a developer, you're not going to develop for the most recent whiz-bang system, which only has 13% market share. That means only 13% of the users can use your app. So why develop?
When I was actively developing for Android before I took my apps down, I never targeted the most recent version. Now, this was obviously years ago when I was writing these. But at the time, Android 3.0 and 4.0 were the Android versions that were out. And I was still targeting 1.5 to 2.
Sure.
I didn't know if I could... Target 2, that was good. I had a large number of devices that could still run it.
Right, right. And that's still the story, right? I mean, you're far better off doing something for Marshmallow or KitKat today, percentage-wise, in terms of reaching a target market, than you would doing Nougat. I keep saying it like a Nougat. And when, you know, Oreo comes out or whatever they call it, it'll probably have 2% market share for the next 6 to 12 months.
Now, if it is Oreo, I am going to go out on a limb and say that Google is naming it after my recently deceased cat.
Was your cat's name Oreo?
Yep.
I like it.
Yep. So, Google giving us a shout out. We appreciate it, Google.
Well, you know, I think Google should now, Google, if you take this idea, you can send a check to me, and I'll split it with John. I'll split it, you know. I'll split this check with John, because he led to this thought. So if you're really going to name this next upcoming Android thing Oreo, which I think is a fine name. I happen to like Oreo cookies. You know, you could do the Apple thing and use it as the basis of your next several names, because as Oreo cookie fans know, it's not just one Oreo anymore. Oh, no. There's Red Velvet Oreo. There's Cinnamon Oreo. There's S'mores Oreo cookies. There's, you know, Green Mint Oreo cookies. There's Golden Cream Oreo cookies. There's Watermelon Oreo cookies. There's just a whole bunch of... You could go on for years, literally, without running out of Oreo cookie names. So, anyway, I think this current one should be just Oreo, you know, the basis, the start of the Oreo dynasty. And you can move up to, you know, Oreo Cinnamon and Oreo whatever as time goes on. Anyway, advice, free for now, but if you feel like rewarding John and me for it, send a check.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We're good. We're not proud. Not proud at all. Okay. Next up, John. John has a kind of interesting story, which I have run into myself before.
Well, as I mentioned, I've been traveling a lot recently. I left on a Tuesday morning for Washington, D.C., and got back on Sunday night. Then a few days later, on a Wednesday morning, I left and went up to Northern Ohio and was back on Sunday night. And it was when I was in Ohio that I realized that even though my Verizon service plan had just sort of reset around the 26th, 27th of last month, I had blown through about 90% of my 8 gigabytes of data. And that was kind of disturbing, because even though I could pay for overage, you know, it wouldn't be too bad, I really don't want to. Verizon does have a cool feature now called Pop Data, which I didn't try, but it does in theory allow you to say, okay, look, I'm going to use a lot of data over the next hour, so let me pay you $3 to get unlimited data for an hour, which would have been really useful if I hadn't been able to find a coffee shop here or there. I could have at least gotten down to business on my laptop and tethered through my phone. So that is an option to keep costs low. But I thought, you know, I'm going to do this the old-fashioned way. I'm just going to turn off cellular data.
Wow.
And so for the last week or so, my wife and I have both had cellular data turned off, and our plan resets itself in another week or so. So I guess we'll try this for another week. But it's an interesting experience. So, Todd, have you ever tried going without cellular data for a while?
I have, and that's because, similar to you, you share a data plan with your wife. I share a data plan with my daughter, who's in college, in grad school now, I guess, since she graduated in May. But, and I keep telling her, do not watch streaming video unless you're on Wi-Fi. But anyway, that didn't take all the time. And so we like you, have hit or come very close to our limit. And what I did was I said, you go ahead, use your data. Do not watch streaming video of any kind. I will turn off data on my phone. Mm-hmm. So I shut down the data on my phone and let her have her data so she could do whatever she needed to do. But it is, and yes, like you, I could pay for overage, and it would be annoying, but wouldn't break the piggy bank. I just didn't want to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, as a matter of principle.
The only thing that I've noticed, so this is the weird thing, when I'm in town here where I live, I'm in Wi-Fi a lot. Mm-hmm. My apartment has Wi-Fi, my offices have Wi-Fi, campus has Wi-Fi pretty much all over the place. So 95% of my day, I don't even notice that I don't have cell data turned on. I notice it when I go out to eat, or when I'm driving between campus and home or something like that. And really, the only thing that I I've missed is iMessage and other messaging apps, things like WhatsApp, iMessage. I've got some friends on those, Facebook Messenger. And it's just because I don't get messages pushed to me in real time. So I'll you know, go out to eat, and then I'll come back, and oop, there's three or four iMessage that will pop up at the same time, which is kind of interesting. We take that for granted now. We went off of text messaging because there were other better platforms, and trust me, I do not want to go back to SMS text messaging because it never, it doesn't do very well with things like groups and all that, but it is, I guess, useful when you don't have text or when you don't have data to actually be able to use SMS.
Yeah, you know, and I forgot that iMessage is a database service and it's not its own little separate network. So
yep.
iMessage dies, huh?
It does, but thankfully it doesn't die to the point that you never get the messages. The messages do get held on Apple's server and they get pushed back out to you when the device reconnects. So that, I guess, would be my bigger worry. Because if you remember back in the day when SMS was first starting out, if your phone was turned off and an SMS was sent to you, sometimes it made it, sometimes it didn't. You know, it could get eaten up by the network and never actually make it to you when you turned back on and reconnected.
Yeah.
But iMessage seems to do pretty good. But it's just an interesting thing as a geek. I've had all these interesting experiences happen to me over the last few weeks and random stories and just oddities. And I've thought about, you know, I could go on Facebook Live and tell these stories, or I could, you know, post a bunch of pictures, and I think, well, you know, maybe I don't want to use my data for that. But thankfully, Wi-Fi is pretty abundant in many places, so I've been able to use Wi-Fi where I can find it. Starbucks are great things. Starbucks and malls are not so great things because they don't always use Starbucks for Wi-Fi or Google for Wi-Fi. Sometimes they use the mall's crappy Wi-Fi. but yeah, it's been an interesting tech tale or tech experience, which I guess I will go out for another week with, since I still have 8 days left before my cycle restarts.
Yeah, well, you know, 8 days a week, it's a Beatles song. But at any rate, you know, one of the things you notice I'm not exactly sobbing for you or anything, because I am old enough to remember when we had no cell phones of any kind. Smart or dumb.
So what you're saying is you didn't care about data.
We didn't even know what it was. You know, yeah. I remember going off to grad school. There was no such thing as a cell phone. Got to grad school. The only places that had email were four universities in the United States. I happened to be at one of the four. Mm-hmm. But there was nobody I knew to talk to it that wasn't on campus or one of the other three campuses. So, you know, for me, this is...
it is interesting. As you mentioned, not having anyone to talk to on email. And when I got email, I was one of the few people in my age group to have email.
Yeah.
Because just no one else cared about it. No one else had the internet. I was right there at that cusp of the internet becoming mainstream for non-technical people and non-industry professionals.
Yeah.
So I remember those days of having an email address, and people were amazed you had an email address. And then it was kind of like, yeah, it's kind of useless because I could log in once a week and maybe miss one newsletter.
Well, you know, and the way I look at, you know, now, of course, we have the web and we have unlimited number of websites to go, you know, waste our time or, you know, or make good use of our time, depending on how you look at it. But I remember when, for those of you who remember Usenet, which was a text-based only messaging platform, a bulletin board type platform, That was distributed from node to node to, you know, every computer who was on Usenet. It was a free service, right? So you just needed to have some way to get there. It was possible to read all of Usenet every day. I never really tried it, but I know some people who did. I used to only read the groups that I found interesting. But can you imagine trying to read everything on every website that's publicly available? You know, forget the dark net stuff, just the regular, you know, regular net stuff. It's a very different world we live in now. You know, we can't imagine being without our cell phones and data. Well, I guess you have more than imagined what it's like to be without data for the last week. But it's a whole different world.
If you want to transport yourself back to a different world, this actually brings up my next tech tale. It's kind of a sad story personally for me, and I will tell you why that is, but in a very happy mood because Blizzard Entertainment has released StarCraft Remastered.
Okay.
So if any of our listeners were StarCraft aficionados in the early 2000s, late 90s, this is the original StarCraft and Brood Wars expansion. Remastered, so it looks beautiful on modern resolution, so no more 640 by 480.
Okay.
And it uses actual BlizzardNet for multiplayer games, so you don't have to, you know. I actually had a friend a few years ago VPN into my home network so we could play StarCraft, because we need to be on a local network for it, and that was the only way for it to work.
That's pretty funny.
The reason I say this is sad for me, it's because I've been so busy lately that I have downloaded it, I have installed it, and I haven't been able to play it yet. So that's kind of the sad thing. But I have some friends, we're already planning on a virtual LAN party at some point.
So does it still require you to be on the same local network?
Nope.
Okay.
You can be all anywhere on the internet and connect up.
I got to really get some sound effects stuff for our podcast. I could play things like a sad trombone and things.
I had a soundboard once for Skype. I should try to find it again.
Yeah. Well, I have a sad trombone thing too. So, as I've been mentioning for years now on this podcast, I've spent years waiting for my daughter to graduate from college, so I could inherit her 2013 MacBook Air.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a 13-inch MacBook Air, fully loaded at the time, 8 gigs of RAM and all that kind of good stuff, to replace my 2010 MacBook Air. But with all the stuff happening around me, today we are still recording on my 2010 MacBook Air. And I have not gone to configure my MacBook Air, my new MacBook Air, my new 2013 MacBook Air, to record these things. But I am looking forward to doing that sometime soon. That said, I think it's pretty remarkable that my 2010 MacBook Air is still good enough to record a podcast on. It says something about Apple's build quality, you know? You know, and I would say, John, that if you travel internationally, most places, I mean, if you're in a big city, no problem. But there are some, if you go out of the, you know, kind of the normal big city environment, you will hit places where your roaming plan or your, you know, rented SIM card or whatever will not work. And or you just walk two blocks and it doesn't work,
mm-hmm.
which is what happened to me in Edinburgh, Scotland, where T-Mobile UK just went, you're like about a block over where I really want to transmit to. So no data for you. But like you, I found Wi-Fi to be pretty abundant. So that was okay. All right, so pretty slow week, I think. I had to really struggle to find things for us to talk about.
That's why I'm really glad you're the play-by-play man and I'm just the color commentary on this podcast.
Well, except for that day you and Don Sorcinelli.
We did the whole thing. I had to be the play-by-play guy that day. I had to step into your formidable shoes.
Yeah. Yeah.
On the podcast that shall not be named.
Well, in any case, John, I don't know what your schedule's like now that school is starting up again for you, but I assume we'll be back more or less regularly, so we will.
Oddly enough,
yeah?
For me, because of the programs that I coordinate, I do a lot of planning over the summer.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, my fall tends to be less busy.
Oh, that's pretty weird.
Yeah, I just have to teach. I just have to do the stuff I plan to do, which is kind of easy after you planned it.
So now it's all execution.
Yep.
Okay, so on Post Eclipse, for the next Post Eclipse podcast, hopefully the world is still here and people and animals won't go wild and, you know, destroy stuff on Monday.
Yep.
They realize the sun will come back. We hope.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be back hopefully with some kind of news. It's been pretty slow. Well, we're still probably a couple weeks from Apple announcing anything.
I am eager for that this year because I am toying with the idea of upgrading both my Apple Watch and perhaps even my iPhone again.
Really?
Because even though I just bought the 7 Plus last year, this 32 gigs of space thing is really getting on my nerves.
Oh, yeah. That's what happened to me with iPad Pro.
Yeah.
That's why I had to move from the 9.7 to 10.5 because I bought the 32 gig iPad Pro 9.7 and I was skimping on the shrimp, you know.
Yeah.
I was deleting big apps. you know, just to get enough space for other stuff. So I can sympathize with that. A couple of my friends in our All Hawaii podcast have been running the iOS 11 beta, and they are really high on it. So, except for my, and I know I mention this every week, sorry, except for losing Civilization Revolution, my favorite game, when iOS 11 comes out, I am looking forward to it, actually, especially an iPad.
I'd bring up all the other things that you've lost, but you'll get sad, and
yeah,
you'll just
spot
be
watch.
Down.
Yeah.
You brought it up.
Yeah, my Moto 360 is still working, so I don't really feel a need to upgrade my watch yet. When the Moto 360 dies or whatever, I really don't know what to get because Android Wear has kind of died on the vine, you know.
And at the same time, it looks like Apple Watch is here to stay. All the analysts that were talking about how stupid it was and how who would want it, it seems like Apple's doing just fine with it.
Yeah, I guess I'll get an Apple Watch if my Moto 360 dies. But it's funny, you know. Apple Watch. If you get a new Apple Watch, LTE or no LTE?
That's a good question. I haven't decided yet.
Okay.
It would be interesting to have the LTE. It depends on how much it would be and how much I would see myself actually venturing outside the house without my phone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and one more story. One more question, I should say. Since we were speaking about Apple Watches, are there any apps that you must have got to have? On third-party apps? Because there are no third-party apps I use on my Android Wear watch.
1Password. I use that on my Mac and on my Windows machine, and I use it on my watch because it gives me the one-time codes. So when I'm logging into something that needs two-factor authentication, I can quickly pull it up on my watch and look at it instead of having to pull my phone out. And I do like trying to think of those other third parties. Microsoft's Outlook app isn't too bad on the watch. It takes forever to load, but it's not too bad once you get it up and running. Swarm. I started using Swarm again for check-ins and
mayorships
and all that.
Yeah,
and that works really well on the watch. A couple times I was able to covertly check into a place without having to pull out my phone and, you know, break the mood while I'm talking to someone. I could just kind of tap on my watch a few times and check in. So, yeah, there's a few good third-party apps for the Apple.
Okay. Well, I am not in any situation right now where I have to replace my watch. Although having had Android, having had the Moto 360 for 2 years now. 2 years? Yeah, I guess I've had the Moto 360 2 years also now. I would be very hesitant to go smartwatchless. It's really handy to have those notifications and incoming calls and that sort of thing up here on my watch.
I'll tell you one really humorous story with it. When I was driving through Washington, D.C. downtown, there's, of course, a bunch of construction here and there, and I would plot out where I wanted to go on my watch because the rented vehicle I had a GPS built in, but it wasn't very good. So I put on my watch, and I'd throw the phone down, you know, in the console. And, of course, the directions are on my watch, and I'm driving, so I can, like, glance over and go, okay, you know, turn left in 200 feet or whatever it is. And one of the people that I was with commented and said, wow, you really know Washington really well because you're just driving around, you're getting us right where we need to be, and there's no, you know, you're not glancing down at the map all the time. Yeah. Thinking, yeah, well, it's because it's right on my wrist, and if there's construction, I just keep driving, and it eventually reroutes me around it. So,
Now you should have said I memorized the maps before I came here, and we're good.
Yeah, that's the kind of person I am.
Yeah. Or even better, I happened to glance at the maps before we left, and I have eidetic memory, so we're good. Okay, all right. So, Mobile News Podcast 218. John is back, and we will talk to you next time.